Welcome to episode 202 of Telepractice Today with Kim Dutrow-Allen and Dr. Todd Houston.
Welcome back to another episode. This past week, I got a chance to do something other than be a speech therapist and a mom, and went to a film festival that was here in our little town, but it was an international film festival, and got to see lots of different independent movies and really cool things. And one of the last movies that they showed was actually a film about film. Like physical film, and how all these movies are kind of like disintegrating in people's basements, and how people are trying to save them. So they went through a lot of the history of film, and the director and guy who filmed the documentary was there as well. And he talked about how when he's filming a documentary, he feels like he can connect with people better than any other way, that something about that camera being in front of him just like allows them to share more of themselves. And I just like that hit struck me so hard as like being something we do in telepractice too. And then I started thinking about how the whole like film industry also makes it so we can do things like Beyond Video and do telepractice and all of those that kind of came from the entertainment industry. I never thought would kind of interweave into what we're doing, but it's cool to watch how like technology and all these other industries start to affect what we're doing and improve it. And so those were my thoughts at the film festival this week. So I still turned into an SLP. I was doing something else.
How can I use this in my sessions?
Right.
Yeah, I think like we've talked about for 2 years, 4 years. How many years?
4 years.
4 years. Yeah. Of integrating the technologies that are out there and these changes that are coming. And I think the more we can do that, the better off we're going to be. But yeah, there's exciting things happening. And I think it's going to continue to, you know, enhance what we're doing. And it'll
for
be
sure.
Kind of neat to see.
Yeah.
This episode, we have Dr. Shari Robertson, former ASHRAE president, who is also very passionate about another topic, and that is burnout and how can we be more resilient as speech-language pathologists and allied health professionals. So we have her on today, and I think everyone should enjoy what she has to say.
Yeah, it's great.
Hi, are you creative? Do you want to give a webinar or teach a course? Maybe you're a writer. Do you want to create a blog? Maybe you have an idea for a podcast. Whatever your passion is, we at 3C Digital Media Network want you to be a content creator so we can bring your ideas to life. So, to get started, visit our website at 3cdigitalmedianetwork.com. and sign up to be a content creator. We look forward to seeing your passions come to life on our platform.
Dr. Shari Robinson, welcome to the podcast. Our first former ASHRAE president joining us, so we really feel privileged to have you on the podcast. Would you mind sharing more about your background and how you got into speech-language pathology?
First of all, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to have an opportunity to chat with you. I was looking forward to it today. And that's a question that sometimes I'm a little bit reluctant to answer, only because I probably didn't get into the profession for the best reasons. My mom was a school-based SLP, and she graduated from, like, I think the first class from Michigan State University in speech correction. And when I was time for me to go off to college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I said, you know, I think I'll just stay home and go to the local college. And my mom I think it had enough of me at 18 years. It was time for me to go away. So she said, no, no, I will pay for you to go away for a year. And I went to Western Michigan University to find out what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the year, I knew I was supposed to come back. And then I thought, I really liked it there. So I said, gee, what major could I take that I couldn't get at home that my mom would let me stay here? And I thought speech and language pathology, because that's what she was. So mm-hmm. it actually turned out great, but it was probably not the most auspicious of beginnings. But I do remember when I took my first class, my intro class, I did really feel like I'd come home, that it absolutely spoke to me as this is what I want to be doing. And I still feel that way after many, many years of practice. And I think that probably is the strongest thing I can say about the fact that I still have a passion for this field.
That's a good indicator that you made the right decision, right?
Yep.
And even though, again, it probably wasn't the best one to best motivation to start with, but it worked out fine.
And you have had an illustrious career working in the schools and then getting into going into academia and being in administration in academia. So it's touch on some of those high points, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I did. I started out as a broad-based SLP in West Bend, Wisconsin. And while I was there, I really began to think about at that point, and that was a lot of years ago, I was really passionate about the links between oral and written language, so language and literacy. And at that point, my colleagues looked at me and told me I was crazy and to please be quiet and don't add any more to their plates. But that has been something that has continued to be forefront in my career, is that looking at how oral language and written language go together. And that's why actually, you may or may not know that I own a publishing company. We publish children's books written by SLPs for that very reason, so that we can link language and literacy. So that's been something through my career. And I did move into administration in the schools and then decided I wanted to go back and get my doctorate. So I drove 2 hours each way to the University of Wisconsin in Madison through the Wisconsin winters and the snow and the blowing. And that's how I ended up here in Pennsylvania. So while I was in Wisconsin, though, when I got my PhD there, I also minored in counseling and have since done additional training in counseling. So I have counseling credentials on top of my speech and language pathology credentials, which has led me into some of these other fields. You mentioned administration at the university, and that is very true. I ended up as the associate provost, which is like second in command in academics, which meant I had to deal with, how do I say this? I had to deal with some colleagues who were not always the easiest to get along with. And I used to call that guiding people to a new vision when we had to teach people things or to have people do things they didn't want to do. But those credentials and that counseling piece has really helped me right along the line. And it really is part of our job as SLPs anyway. I taught our counseling class at the university level. And it really is very complementary to it. And so as I began to get into these less traditional presentations, you realize how important this piece is as well. I'll tell you one other little story is I used to do a lot of talks to businesses about things like stress management and things like that. I had a consulting company, Bit Communication, and I was talking to a bunch of business suits one day about stress management. And I thought, you know who really needs to hear this? Is my colleagues, my SLP colleagues. So I put in a proposal to Asha for a presentation called I Used to Have a Handle on Life, But It Broke. And they told me that it would never qualify for CEUs. That was a number of years back, right? Mm-hmm. And in the end, I rewrote it in a way that they would accept it. And we had so many people. The room was packed. People were all stressed out because they couldn't get in the room. And then we had to repeat it like 3 times during convention. They kept rescheduling it. So that was way back. And now, of course, Asha and the profession is talking about those things. Right. About stress management and this topic that we're going to talk a little bit more about today, which is an extension of that, when we start thinking about how stress affects us to the point of burnout. So that's kind of how the those all things piled on top of one another. And it's like, as you work on one thing, you realize you need the next piece and the next piece. I talk about psychologically safe workplaces. I talk about, you know, dealing with difficult people. All of these things kind of fall within the same realm. So hopefully that gives you a little bit, but not too much. I could talk a lot about that, but mm-hmm. I'll stop there.
Well, I think it's fine. Let's just kind of dive in, because, you know, we know that really, I think since COVID, you know, everyone has been on edge, so to speak. And there has been more and more discussion around that work-life balance and how do we achieve that. And I noticed just back at, you know, the last ASHA in 2023, there were, you know, lots of presentations within this topic area, and they were extremely popular and standing room only kinds of things. So I would say, you know, how can we avoid burnout? Just kind of throw it out there to you.
Sure. You're right. I always say when people come to my sessions on burnout is, I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so sorry that you're here, both at the same time. It's one of those topics that you know people need, but you wish they didn't. So, and I still feel that way. But what I do think I try to do when I talk about this topic is to give people some background information that they may not realize about burnout and what causes it, and then think about how we can reverse it, recognize it and reverse it, and then build some resilience to it. So maybe the best place to start is a lot of people use the term burnout without really knowing what it means. There are many ways that people use that. And a lot of times you'll hear people use the word burnout kind of in relation to a take this job and shove it situation, where, you know, this job is terrible, I'm leaving, you know, I'm burnt out. The thing is, if you are actually still have that much energy to tell them that, you're not really burned out. You're stressed and you're in an unhappy situation, but that's not really burnout. It doesn't mean that the stress is good and that you're feeling from that job isn't important and legitimate, because it is. And that is actually the precursor to burnout. But if you're actually at the point where you're just going, you know, I'm just going to go in there and quit, that's actually a really healthy reaction to that situation. Because before we even talk about burnout, I want to talk about work. There's a difference between burnout and just having you're working in a really bad place to work.
Right.
I always say my public amount announcement for today is, if you're working in a place that is high stress and has unrealistic workloads and productivity standards or poor leadership, or you have a lack of autonomy, or you're just feeling psychologically unsafe, that's just a bad place to work. And if you got a job like that, you really need to find another job. And you have to have this really hard conversation with yourself about, is keeping this job more important than my mental and physical and psychological health. So that's kind of my public service announcement for today, is if your job is bad, it's a bad job. Okay. So one of the things you'll find about me is I always have these little sayings. So I want people just to put this little one in your head. So when a flower doesn't bloom because of a bad environment, you change the environment, not the flower, right? So you shouldn't having to be changing to deal with a bad environment. You need to change your environment. Okay. So what is burnout then, if it's not that?
Yeah.
And so burnout is really just when you get to a point where you are completely done. You have no energy left physically, psychologically. You are beyond stressed out. You are literally just in total collapse. That is what we don't want to have happen. What we want to have happen is to get there before you hit that, and have you recognize when you are getting to that point of burnout. So a couple of things I want to point out. Number one is, I typically title this presentation, when I do it as a presentation, is, you're too good to feel this bad. sad because the people who are at most risk of burnout are high achieving, creative, passionate, goal oriented, motivated individuals who really want to make a difference. Those are the people who are at risk for burnout. So if you are just totally awesome and you're working really hard and you care so much, you are at more risk of burnout than somebody who really doesn't care at all about their job. In fact,
you got to be on fire to burn out, right? Yeah.
That's my saying. You have to have a burning passion to burn out. Yeah. You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. People who don't care about their jobs don't burn out. They don't care. So right. they don't get to the point where they combust. So it's really the fact that we're so, I always say to people, because you're so awesome, that's why you are at risk, because you have a burning passion and you have to have that in order to burn out. So let me think about that. Oh, another thing I want to mention is a couple of other myths about burnout. And then I want to talk about the difference between stress and burnout. But related back to the job thing, you know, one big myth about burnout is people who burn out hate their jobs. But the research actually doesn't reflect that. The research says that there's actually no correlation between how much you like your job and burning out. In fact, kind of related to what I just said, guess who is at most at risk for burning out? People that love their jobs.
Love their job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they care about it and they want to do the best. And so they just give and they give, even if it's the conditions are bad, even if the expectations are inappropriate, they are more apt to burn out. So even psychologically positive workplaces can cause people to burn out when they don't know how to, as you said, manage that work-life balance. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that can happen. The other thing before we talk about the difference that one other myth I just want to mention is a lot of people think, like, I know when I'm burning out, I can feel it. Well, that's actually not true. Because it's a gradual thing, kind of like that old story of the frog when you know, put it in the pot and you turn the water. You don't realize you're burning out typically until you are completely combusted, but we can change that. So that's what I hope we could do today.
Yeah. And I think sometimes too, and you maybe have talked about this, that your body will tell you before you can even tell yourself that you are at that point.
You're right.
You know, not sleeping.
It does manifest first physically. And I always say that if you don't pay attention to it, even though typically it manifests first, it's kind of psychological first, but your body is going to pick you up and slam you up against the guardrail if you don't pay attention to that. So you're absolutely right. It is the physical that we see first, but it's because we've been ignoring it all along. And
yeah.
I'll bet you know some of the physical signs of that are happening.
I had a persistent eye twitch for like 3 months last school year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty sure that was related to that.
I think you're probably right. And stress does amazingly weird things to us.
Yeah.
So let me just talk a little bit about stress and burnout. And you guys need to stop me because I'll tell you what, this is a topic I love. So slow me down if you've got a question. There is a difference between stress and burnout. And stress, it's really supposed to be a short-term solution to a short-term solution to a problem that's right in front of you. And everybody's probably heard about our reptile brain, the amygdala, and its job from way back when was to look for danger. And then if there's danger, you know, flood us with hormones, right? Mm-hmm. And it's that old fight or fight thing. And unfortunately, you know, when we're stressed out and that those hormones flood us, we're not allowed to like kill the person that's driving us crazy or leave work. You know, we don't have those options. So we sit there stewing in these stress hormones. So stress is supposed to just solve the problem right in front of us. You know, I had a friend once who literally, he tipped his Jeep over in a ditch and he pushed it off himself.
Wow.
Never could do that again. You've probably all had situations like that, right?
Right.
Yeah. The adrenaline.
But when that adrenaline just sits there with no place to go, that is really what begins to manifest in the physical problems that you were mentioning, Kim, the things like, oh, high blood pressure and neck, back aches, high blood pressure, diabetes, teeth grinding, all of those things can manifest through stress. Burnout, on the other hand, is the result of long-term exposure to unrelenting stress. Until you get to the point where you're stressed over and over and over again, until your body just literally combusts. I'm just today, because today is the day it's due, I just submitted a proposal for the convention this year on confidence. And it's specifically related to the compensation conversation, having the confidence to begin that conversation. And it's that same old reptile brain in there that constantly tells us that we can't do it and we're going to embarrass ourselves and it's too scary. It's the same reptile brain that is causing these same issues. So the research I'm doing, and it's actually working because I've been doing it, because our brain is wired to look for all the negative stuff. That's what it's supposed to do and keep telling us that. Is to just say, okay, brain, I get it. You're doing your job. Fine. And then move on. That's the same thing we think about. Okay, reptile brain, thank you very, very much. Now we need to move on and actually do it. It's a very fascinating literature. So stress is really about too much. You got too many pressures. It's demanding too much of you. Burnout is about not enough. You just got nothing left. So that's the best way for me to compare those two. That make sense?
Yeah. I think so. I do have a question. How would you, is there a difference between like, I have a mental health disorder, like I'm experiencing depression and burnout, or are they so intertwined, or can you have, you know, can you be burnout because you're depressed, or can you be depressed because you're burnout, and how do you separate those two?
You know, that is an excellent question, because there are elements of psychological mental health issues in burnout. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the chicken and the egg is difficult to sort out. But typically people who are stressed are not going to have moved into that realm. Once you get into the burnout realm, then you can see things like clinical depression, as opposed to just anxiety, which is more apt to be something related to stress. That is why if somebody is truly burnt out, it's not something you can fix overnight. And it's something that takes 6 months to 2 years to move out of if you have truly reached what I call the spontaneous combustion stage. That those are intertwined, and that's why burnout often requires mental health professionals.
Right.
Stress may or may not. So that's a really good question. So one of the other things that's the message I want people to hear is to understand that there are stages of burnout. And if you can train yourself to identify those stages in yourself, or perhaps those you supervise or those you work with, you can help reverse that before they get to the point, as you mentioned, where now we're looking at clinical mental health issues, we're looking at physical issues that could be beyond the things that we can manage on our own.
Mm-hmm.
So I have five stages that I talk about. The flicker stage, the smolder stage, spontaneous combustion, the phoenix stage, and then the fully recharged stage. And the flicker stage, I'll bet we can all relate to. Flicker stage is just kind of, you know, these signs come and go. Sometimes you kind of feel really stressed out, but you push through it. But sometimes you just kind of feeling off, or you get a little depressed, or you just can't deal with it. And so you often do something to try to relieve the stress, which is good. But sometimes you just push through it. And here's one of my big make sure you remember this statement. In the flicker stage is when perfectionism becomes ingrained in your lifestyle, because perfectionism is one of the biggest causes of eventual burnout. So I say this a lot about being perfect. it's totally useless construct because we're human, you know, and we're just not going to be perfect. On the other hand, I really think at the universities, we inflict perfectionism on our students.
Yeah.
Because the
or in school districts too.
Same thing.
School IEPs, you know, they have to be perfect. They have to have every I dotted and T crossed and every box checked, all of that.
Yeah, I wrote my share of IEPs. And I think, you know, that's true. If we have to be perfect in that, then be perfect in that. And then forget about some of the perfectionism and other things. I could admit to you right now that my home would not be looked fondly upon by Martha Stewart because I can't do all of the things, right? All of the things. So I clean when it's time to clean, but I just deal, you know, I have a lot of animals in the house, so I get dust fluffies the size of Texas. So I just name them. Like Steve, you know, and I go, oh, Steve, how you've grown, right? Because if I worry about Steve every day and I worry about the IEPs, I am setting myself up for eventual burnout. So in that flicker stage, I talk a lot to people about this perfectionism tendency. So if we have to be perfect in something, put it there. As I mentioned, I just turned in some ASHA proposals and every time I read it, I find something else I need to fix, right? To make it perfect. But it is ever perfect? No. I will get it back. I'll look at it 2 weeks after it's submitted and go, how did I miss that? So we're never perfect. So that's flicker. And that can go on for a long time. The next stage is smolder, where things are starting to get a little wonky. You might have those teeth grinding. You might get some neck and back pain. And you might have occasional meltdowns. And what happens in smolder is you tend to begin to not engage so much in play and leisure. And it's for professional, when you're talking particularly about professional burnout, and you're focusing so much on work that you're not getting that time that you need away from work. And you had mentioned about the work-life balance, right? Early on?
Yeah.
Well, that's just a bunch of, that's ridiculous. There is not a work-life balance. It should be tilted toward white life, really. Mm-hmm. Nobody at the time when you die says, oh, I should have worked more. So we really need to make sure we're tilting that to life. And I know people think, I have to work. Uh-huh, we do have to work. But you don't have to work every second. And you don't have to work when you come home. You don't have to work. Think about work all the time you're at home. And if we have time, I'll give you a few suggestions on that at the end. Let me go on then. Then there's spontaneous combustion, where you go from mostly good to like really bad. And you're just this pile of ashes that can't get off the couch. That's true burnout. Eventually, though, with some strategies, you can get to the phoenix stage where you start to take those first steps back to the point where then you are fully recharged. And when you are charged, you should be excited about your professional and your personal pursuits. And you should know how to protect yourself from the effects of burnout. So does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, very much so.
And one of the things I make a big point of when I talk to people in person is this isn't linear. It's not like as you start here, you have to go to the end. You have to go through mm-hmm. them all to recharge. You can turn around and manage it. And that's what you want to do. And so when I talk with supervisors or people who work and manage other people, I tell them it's their job not to just take care of themselves, but to watch for that in their employees or their colleagues to see if they are moving to those stages and taking care of them. Okay. I'm happy to go on.
Keep going.
You have a question thrown up. As you can tell, I'm like, okay, I can tell you whatever you'd like to know about, because I would like to give you some ideas about, okay, so what do we do about this? That's kind of the background information.
And I like that. I like that too, because I feel like we do, like I talked about with the IEPs and things like that, we have a field that I don't know if it's more than others, maybe you could say with research and things like that, but that is prone to burnout because there is such high expectations from, you know, from insurance people or from our school districts or from parents even to be performing at a high level to help our the kids that we're working with or the adults that we're working with. And so with the pressure that's just always inherently there, what do we do about the burnout?
Yeah, you're right. Because we are in a helping, what's called a helping profession.
Yeah.
And people who are drawn to helping professions want to what? They want to help
people.
They want to help people. So it requires that you interact with people. And anytime you're interacting with people, especially people who need help, they are needy, it's going to take a lot from you, right? So you literally often are putting your energy into someone else. So OTs and PTs and doctors and, you know, people, counselors and audiologists, people who help others, that's part of our profession. And it also, our profession tends to draw people who really are willing to give of themselves. And that's, it's a good and bad thing. Right. And it's one of those things where you have to learn your own boundaries and learn how to keep work at work, which we'll talk about in a minute. So you're right. We are, same thing though with like if a doctor makes a mistake, right? That's a really bad thing. So you have to give yourself grace in other areas and be sure to nurture yourself outside of work so that you have it when you go into work. So that's, you're absolutely right. This is where I always say, I wish I had a magic wand that I could just wave over us all. There's no magic wand, but there are some things that you can do. So the first thing we do is being able to recognize, of course, if we're flickering or smoldering, that that's where we need to get started. Or if we've burnt out, that's a little more serious, but we're going to work on the same things. As you mentioned, like the first area is your body. Your body breaks down first. One of the sayings you read in the counseling literature is toxic waste generates toxic thoughts, which leads to toxicity physically. So you, this is, we talked about before, like the headaches and the physical collapse and the high blood pressure and things like that. My blood pressure has always been really great, but during COVID, when I was dealing with a number of things like we all were, my blood pressure just inexplicably started to go up. And I realized I had to do some of the same things I teach people all the time I needed to do. So it can happen. The other thing is there's like no test for burnout. You can't go to the doctor and they can't give you a diagnostic test that says, oh, you're burned out, right? Here's the pill you take. So we actually kind of, you're right, we have to manage it ourselves. And even if they treat the high blood pressure, that's not going to treat like the underlying issues. So physically, it's the stuff that you hear all the time, but I'm going to put a twist on it. Physically, you got to get more sleep, good food, and moderate exercise. And everybody's like, every time I say that, they're like, oh, come on. And I say, well, unfortunately, it's true. Most of us are sleep deprived. Either of you would admit to that? Yeah.
Yes.
We all need more sleep, right? And even when we're in bed, we lay there and our brain, it's like at 2 a.m. says, let me lay out for you every problem and concern and worry you have, you know, so you lay there. So there are a lot of ways you can manage that. I actually have this great app called Sleeping Pill. And my favorite track is just a bunch of monks doing at some hertz. And it puts me right to sleep every time. So we actually need more sleep than we're getting. But when you're burned out, you don't just need it. You have to get more sleep if you're totally burned out. And the other thing about, I talk about food and exercise. Everybody says, oh, you're going to tell me I have to eat a healthy diet and I have to work out like crazy. And I say, actually, I'm not going to tell you that. I'm going to tell you when you're burned out and stressed is the worst time to try to start a diet or to use, or to do like crazy workouts. Your body's already in a state of negative energy. Like just try not to eat like the whole bag of Cheetos. Just, you know, just.
Or on the other side, just try and eat.
Yeah.
I know there's been times where I get so stressed out that I'm like, oh yeah, I have not eaten today. And that seems to boggle the mind for, you know, a normal person, but there are stages of that as well.
And you know, we forget that our body really is our one big commodity. So for you, you might need to like just make sure you like pack something and put it on your desk so it breaks, you eat something. For other people who are stress eaters, and I would say that I'm in a stress eater. I'm definitely a stress eater. I make sure that I have stuff handy that I can crunch or whatever that will help me with that. But if I occasionally need a donut, I'm going to eat a donut. I'm not going to worry about that because we stress ourselves over that too. And the other thing you're not going to do is do crazy exercise routines. Like when you're stressed, only do what you want to do that feels good. I get that from people all the time. Oh, you're going to tell me I'm not eating well and I'm not exercising enough. I'm like, no, I'm not telling you that. Like if all you can do today is roll off the couch, that's okay. Just, you know, do what feels good. But do pay attention to your body. And right. I can talk on that a lot, but I don't have time with that. How about you guys? What do you do physically for yourself?
I've started trying to get outside more and just like go on a walks. I recently got a dog, so that helps to just like kind of that forced, okay, now you have to go outside and go on a walk even in the middle of the day and things like that.
Right. Same with you. Me. I have two dogs that demand often to go out. So that's an incentive. But also, I think going back to the mental health side of things, sometimes I just want to go walk by myself because I need a break from the dogs. Mm-hmm. I need a break from, and I just need to just be, you know, and take in the, you know, the environment or, you know, get some fresh air and just clear my head.
So you are perfectly describing what I call resilience or recovery routines. And one of the things when we talk about the next piece, which is kind of the resilient, you know, the mind connection, because the body's like, yeah, take care of your body. But burnout starts in your mind. So you got to get your mind into a different place. So one of the things, I'm going to talk about those breaks in a minute, but one of the things that we are bombarded with constantly are these messages of busy equals success. Mm-hmm. So here, I just pulled three up. I wanted to share. These are some of my favorite ones that I've seen. I saw a sign that said, don't stop when you're tired, stop when you're done. Like that is really bad advice. If you're tired, you need to stop. Mm-hmm. Right. And yet we're bombarded with these messages all the time. These little sayings, these little plaques around. Here's another one, Kim, you might like push yourself because no one else is going to do it. And my response is really ask my boss about that. Honestly, I don't need to push myself.
I feel like that one is more for like, I feel that one as a mom.
Yeah. Well, that's
push yourself because no one else is going to do it.
That is true. But for professional burnout, you know, that why we are bombarded with these all the time.
Right.
Another one I saw is the harder you work, the greater you feel when you accomplish it. But here's the thing is people who do think that way, like most people who are like overachievers, don't stop to like celebrate those successes.
Yeah.
They work really hard. But they don't stop and go, wow, that was wonderful. Now I'm going to not do anything for a while and let myself recover. They just think, oh, what's the next thing I'm going to do? We've been there.
Yep.
I used to have a sign on my door that said, I'm succeeding as fast as I can. Right? I bought into it.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah. So really, I used to talk a lot about time management. I never say that anymore. I talk about energy management now. I never talk about time management. I talk about energy management. So if we were like together in person, I would do this little demonstration where I'd have people, it's called the water glass demo. And I'd have you pretend you had like a full water glass in your hand. Although I always put wine in it. I said, let's put wine in the glass. And then hold it out straight from your shoulder, like as long as you can. So that heavy glass out from your shoulder as long as you can. And then in the presentation, you know, we'll just keep it up there for a while. And I'll say, you know, how long could you hold it straight out? Like a minute, 2 minutes? At what point would your shoulder start to shake? You know, how long could you do that task? But what would happen, and we usually come up with, you know, a couple of minutes max. What would happen though if you just set it down on a table for a few minutes and then picked it up again? Could you then hold it for a longer amount mm-hmm. of time? And right. and that's what I get people to think about is just what you said. We kind of need to take a little break mm-hmm. to help us and not just keep doing that push, 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 push.
Right.
So I call those what you had mentioned a recovery ritual, which means I'm going to take scheduled breaks. Now, when you're at work, sometimes those breaks are scheduled when they tell you can. Mm-hmm. But if you're working on another project or whatever, I schedule mine if I'm writing or whatever for 90 to 120 minutes. I set the timer, right? And then you do some recovery ritual during that time. It could be walking or stretching or yoga or what you said, Kim, a sit spot. That's called a sit spot where you go outside and you just sit there mm-hmm. and just kind like of, that. You know, and it's S-I-T-Z, a sit spot. It can be inside, it can be outside, but you just sit and kind of absorb things. You find your little spot. It could be focused breathing. I do a lot of work in focused breathing. It could be a power nap. I used to be able to, when I was teaching in the schools, I could take a nap during recess when I wasn't on recess duty for 14 and a half minutes that, you know, I would fall asleep literally when they went out the door and I'd wake up half a sec or half a minute before they'd come back in, whatever works. I was pregnant at the time, which did add to that. Right. one of the things I actually do, I hate to even admit this, but like one of my recovery rituals is I sing really badly and I dance really badly out loud, but there's nobody seeing me. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
A lot of times people will say to me in presentations, I can't take a break. I don't have time to take a nap. I'll have to make that up word later, but that's actually not supported by research. The research right. tells us over and over, you know, that the breaks help us get like the wine yeah. glass. We do better with breaks, but are we good at that? Not so good.
Right.
And then you'd mentioned you just do nothing. Like, where do you choose to do that? How do you do that? Said you had a do, Todd. I think you said you oh. had a Todd. You had like yes. a, you like to just do nothing or be by yourself. One of those two.
To go for a walk or just, yeah. yeah. Just to have that time where I don't have to be responsible for something. You know,
and the stimuli that are bombarding us all the time to get that right. out of there.
Exactly.
We used to spend some time on an out island in the Bahamas. And one of the things I would notice it as soon as I got back on the plane was the noise levels mm-hmm. is there. It was silence. And as soon as I got around, I was bombarded by all of that. And right. it was exhausting.
Yeah.
And we don't realize how exhausting that is. One of the things I've started to learn to do, which I did this when my blood pressure started to go up, I did some research and found this was a good way to manage it, is you schedule the time to literally do nothing. Can I just tell you how hard that is?
It's,
to just
yes.
sit and do nothing? It was, here's how I even was able to accomplish it. I wrote myself a little sticky note that I put in front of me that said, you can stop doing nothing anytime you want to stop doing nothing. Because I was literally panicked by doing mm-hmm. nothing. But here's what the research says about doing nothing. It does lower your blood pressure. It relaxes your muscles. It reduces your tension. It sharpens your focus. And here's the thing for me. It increases your innovation and creativity. And it inoculates you against things like stress and burnout. So I told you I was going to give all my like little favorite sayings. Here's my next one. We're human beings, not human doings. So sometimes we just have to like be.
Mm-hmm. Right. I like that. Yeah, that's good.
So yeah. Do I have time for two more?
Two more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing I want to do is mention is that perfectionism piece. Really got to think about that all the time. Be perfect where you have to be perfect. Give away your perfection in other places. And another piece is what I call the transition from work, the leave work at work. Really important to create these transition rituals so that when you come home from work, there is a ritual where you divorce yourself from work and move into home. Now, this is really important when you've got kids.
I was going to also ask that for telepractice because
yes.
I don't ever leave my house.
Right. Okay. So
work is at home.
So then you need to leave that area where you do the telepractice and leave that because your family deserves all of you and you deserve the time to be with them. So I told you my mom, I told you my mom was an SLP. She, I grew up on a dairy farm in Michigan and mom would come home from work and she would go in her bedroom and shut the door for like 30 minutes. And we knew if the house wasn't on fire and somebody wasn't bleeding or maybe both, we best not knock on that door. And I have no idea what she did, but for 30 minutes, she created that transition and then she'd come out and she'd be totally with us and whatever. It was a brilliant strategy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you need to sometimes separate yourself from your family so that you're able to then be with them. But it's that same kind of like alone time. I literally, when I was working at the university, kept a box by the door and I would visualize when I came in the door that I would put work in that box. I would close the box and then I would walk away. And in the morning, I would literally open the box and take that work back with me. We have to learn to, especially during COVID, we got into this home is work, home is work, home is work.
Yeah.
We have to separate that. If you're going to avoid burnout, you have to have time where you're not engaged with work.
Mm-hmm.
Also, do you wear different clothes for when you're doing when you're doing therapy as opposed to your mom clothes? Or only just up from the top half?
I was going to say, at least on the top half.
Yeah. Because that's what I always would do too. Immediately when I came home, I would change into my at-home clothes that I'm no longer associate provost. I am just,
putting the sweatshirt on, putting the ratty t-shirt on, something like that.
Exactly.
It's the
shirt that said I'm
Mr. Rogers kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I live in Pennsylvania and he was 30 minutes from here is where his storybook forest is.
Yeah.
So I have a shirt that actually says I'm bad at yoga, but I'm really good at wearing yoga pants.
I think I had one at one time that said, namaste in bed.
Oh, wow, that's I like that one even
better.
I'm going to
stay in bed.
The other thing I just want people, and again, I have many suggestions to do this, but you'll get the theme. The other thing I always tell people at the end of my presentations is that I want you to do something outrageous. Every month, every couple of months, whatever you can. And what qualifies as outrageous is your definition of outrageous. So a friend of mine decided she was going to join a curling team, which I thought was pretty interesting, right?
Yeah.
And it took her completely out of her comfort zone and out of her routine. I actually walked the Camino Trail last fall with my sister from Porto, Portugal to Santiago, Spain for 16 days. I walked over mountains. And talking about taking it out of your comfort zone and really realizing what's important. Not everybody can do that. Right. You don't have to walk 2 weeks. You can just go do something outrageous that's out of your comfort zone. I also just bought a 2-year-old Andalusian horse that at my age, I should probably not have done, but you know what? It's somewhat outrageous, right?
That's
I have to be brave enough to do something that the other saying I says, just be brave enough to try something that you might suck at, right? It's okay. So that's my favorite last and my last stress reducer, and I appreciate you guys. This has just been fun for me. I didn't let you talk much. Is if you've ever heard of laughter yoga, it has.
I've done it before.
Have you done it?
Maybe yes, do it I've done me, it Kim. Before. So, I did it. Yeah, I did it once with a church group. There was someone that came and taught us how to do it.
Well, tell me how it went. There's it so was, much research behind it.
I know. It was really fun. And it was like, because they'd have you like fake laugh, and then the fake laugh would turn into a real laugh.
Yes.
And then we would just, yeah, it was, I don't know. It was just like releasing, I guess.
And the research says laughter is so good for us. Like, we have to laugh more. That is one of the best ways, actually, to avoid burnout, is to laugh more. But this research says that so-called fake laughter is as good for us as real laughter. And when you get involved in laughter yoga, I teach people lots of different kinds of laughter yoga, but one of my favorite ones is you have people look at their hand. They hold their hand out in front of you and look at your hand. And we call this paycheck laughter, where you look at your hand and you pretend it's your paycheck, and people just burst out like, and before long, the whole room is just dissolved in laughter. They're just hilariously real laughing. And that's what you said. And laughter is truly the best medicine. So you will even notice on a difficult topic, I try to infuse a little bit of levity, because it is the way that we move forward, is realizing that we really only get one life, so let's enjoy it. And we really are the CEOs of our life. And so if we have a bad job, we need to say, I'm going to find something different. If we have a job that's working okay, we need to realize that there's a barrier between job and life, and that life should really take center stage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this may all sound pie in the sky, but it really does work.
Yeah, I like when you were talking about laughter. My husband also works in education, and we recently started watching Abbott Elementary, which is like a good way to, it's about education and a whole comedy around education. And it's like a way that we can like laugh at work about our work and the things about education and still get that, like, that someone understands my stress and the release of laughing about it.
I love that. And I don't know that. And I think I'm going to have to watch it.
Yeah, it's a good one.
No, I actually don't know that one. What I am going to tell you, though, is I want you to like put a lock on whatever room you do your teletherapy in and lock it after a certain time, so you don't go in there until whenever your work hours are.
Yeah.
It's the same general thing, is that we really need to learn how to separate those two things, because we will burn out if we are constantly allowing ourselves to, if we don't allow ourselves to move away from work and really engage with life.
Right.
Shari, I think you have engaged us for, well, almost an hour now. So
I'm so sorry. I think you
were. No, not a bad thing.
That's a good thing.
We don't want to take any more of your time, but we know you love
so
to
much,
talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Tonight. We really appreciate everything that you're doing. And this, you know, this is such an important topic. And I really appreciate you bringing it to us, but also the work that you're doing and presenting around the country and Asha and everyone else. So I think it's great. And I think we, as especially speech language pathologists, really need to think about taking better care of ourselves.
And you know what? That's actually the final bottom line, is we help. We're a helping profession. We give and we give and we give. And I like to say to people, I want to think of put yourself as your client or your student or your patient. Mm-hmm. What would you do for them? And how would you treat them? And because we often don't treat ourselves as well as we treat those we help. So we can be our own helping professional. This is, again, where I know I would be retired on some tropical island if I have a magic wand that said banish burnout on it and I could wave it at us. Mm-hmm. But it is doable. And I will tell you now, I, at one point in my life, was truly burnt out. And it happens to many of us that are really engaged. And so you can make a difference. You can make a change. And that's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about this particular topic.
Well, how can people reach out to you if they want to ask a question or just
say hello? I'm happy
or
to happy
write
to
write a book with you. Sounds like that's an avenue too.
Absolutely, we do publish children's books by SLPs and audiologists specifically for therapy, and that actually is the sandbox I play in that keeps me really engaged and happy. I do it just for the fun of it. My email is my name, S-H-A-R-I dot Robertson, R-O-B-E-R-T-S-O-N at Outlook.com. And I am more than happy to chat with people. If you got, you know, a question, then some way that I could elaborate, this is it's a small piece of a very big topic that really would be something I would work all day on. But sure. I hope you got a few pieces here and there to pique your interest.
Well, we learned a great deal and we really appreciate your time, and you'll definitely have to come back and we'll keep the conversation going.
I've got some other topics that we could talk about as well. So
that's great.
We'll definitely do that.
I have some related really specifically to teletherapy we could talk about. So maybe we'll do that in the future.
Sounds great.
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, that was Dr. Shari Robertson. Thank you again, Shari, for joining us on the podcast. And I could listen to you all day. You are such a wealth of information, especially about burnout and how each of us really need to find that work-life balance and understand when we are feeling less appreciated in our position. What can we do about it? Do we take that all in ourselves and carry that burden, or can we be more proactive and deal with the situation in a way that is more positive and constructive, that helps us to continue to have that passion for the field? So I really appreciate her being on and talking about these issues. They're extremely important, as we all know, because I'm sure at some point we have all dealt with this idea of burnout, or am I really doing what I'm supposed to be doing? So thank you again, Shari, for joining us. And thank you guys for listening to this episode. If you don't mind, leave us that 5-star review. That helps us reach more people and moves us up in the rankings a little bit. And by doing so, we attract more listeners. So it's always helpful if you can do that for us. And until next week, be safe and be kind. This has been a production of the 3C Digital Media Network.